Welcome to this podcast on the responsibilities of charity trustees. My name is John Calladine. Being a charity trustee can be hard work, and for most it is unpaid, and they have the ultimate responsibility for running the charities, dealing with property, finances, employment of staff, and volunteers, and therefore the role is quite onerous. However, being a trustee is also immensely rewarding, providing both expected and unexpected opportunities for personal development and opportunities to bring personal skills of energy to an organisation where new experiences and knowledge can be gained. Charity trustees are involved in the future of the charity, planning and developing, managing staff and volunteers, ultimately accountable to the beneficiaries of the charity commission and the public in general. So, where do we go from here in considering the responsibilities of charity trustees? Firstly, let me dispel the common myth that a trustee and a director are different people. With an incorporated charity, you only have trustees. There may be an employee called the general director of the charity, but that is just a title. However, with charitable companies, that is, companies limited by guarantee, directors are appointed, and directors and the trustees are one of the same person. They can be called directors, or they could be called trustees. In company law, they are directors. In charitable law, they are trustees. Therefore, if a person takes on the role of a trustee of a limited company charity, they are a director, with all the responsibilities that comes with such a role. Incidentally, no one under the age of 18 can be a trustee of a charitable trust or unincorporated association. However, a person under 18 can be a director and so a trustee of a charitable company. Anyone who has an unspent conviction from an offence involving deception or dishonesty or has been removed from trusteeship of a charity by the court or the commission is disqualified by law from acting as a trustee. The appointment of a trustee must also be in accordance with the governing document of the charity, which will set out procedures for appointing new trustees, including any restrictions such as the maximum number of trustees or an age limit. There are two main concepts in relation to the responsibilities of trustees. Firstly, they have a duty of prudence. One, they must ensure that the charity is and remains solvent. Two, ensure the charity uses its charitable funds and assets reasonably and only in furtherance of the charity's objects. 3. Ensure the charity avoids activities that might place the charity, any endowment, funds, assets or reputation at risk. And fourthly, take special care when investing the funds of the charity or borrowing funds for the charity to use. Secondly, the trustee has a duty of care. 1. They must use reasonable care and skill in their work as trustees, use their personal skills and experience as needed to ensure that the charity is well run and efficient. 2. Consider obtaining professional advice in all matters where there may be a material risk to the charity or where the trustees may be in breach of their duties. 3. Trustees have and must accept ultimate responsibility for the direction of the affairs of the charity, ensuring it is solvent, well-run, and delivering the charitable outcomes for the benefit of the public for which it has been set up. From a compliance aspect, 1. The trustee must ensure the charity complies with charitable law, the requirements of the Charity Commission, that is the ultimate regulator, and ensure that the charity prepares good reports on what has been achieved, together with annual returns and accounts as required by law. 2. The trustee must ensure the charity has not breached any requirements or rules set out in its governing document, and it remains true to the charitable purposes and objects for which it was set up. 3. Comply with requirements of other legislation and other regulators which govern the activities of the charity. And fourthly, act with integrity and avoid any personal conflict of interest or misuse of charity funds or assets. This last point brings us to an area of special consideration where the trustees must be very careful in relation to receiving benefit. The law has changed in recent years, and it is now quite permissible for a trustee to be paid a salary or receive benefit for services as long as permission is granted within the governing document. However, the number of paid trustees should always be in the minority, and it is expected that trustees should remain independent and avoid personal reward from the charity. The employment of a relative or spouse of a trustee can always bring conflicts of interest, and this should be avoided. But if it is necessary to hire such a person, then rules and procedures should be followed. A proper recruitment policy should be instigated. The expression equal opportunities comes to mind. Proper interviews, with the trustee abstaining from the decision-making process. Unincorporated charities. This is a particular area of concern for charity trustees, because an unincorporated charity has no legal status. Any bank accounts or property will always be held in the name of the trustees. Therefore, any legal action would be against a charity in the name of the trustees. This differs from an incorporated charity, that is, charitable company, where the legal ownership is the company itself. The legal position of trustees is the Trustee Act 2000, which defines some of the key statutory powers and duties of unincorporated charities. It gives trustees the power they need to administer the charity effectively. This Act does not apply to incorporated charities, although the same principles apply. Let's return now to the main criteria. 1. The duty of care. The Trustee Act 2000 sets out what it calls a duty of care, to exercise such care and skill as is reasonable in the circumstances, having particular regard to 1. Any special knowledge or experience that the trustee has or professes to have, and 2. Where a trustee acts in the course of a business or profession, to demonstrate special knowledge or experience that it is reasonable to expect of a person acting in the course of that kind of business or profession. The duty of prudence. Trustees of any charity must ensure that its finances are used appropriately, prudently and lawfully, and in accordance with its objects. The charity's expenditure must be applied fairly among people who are properly qualified to benefit from it, and must be applied only for the purposes set out in the governing document. Trustees are accountable for the charity's solvency, continuing effectiveness, and preservation of its endowments. They must exercise control over its financial affairs. If the charity owns land or buildings, trustees would need to know on a continuing basis the condition of the property and deal with such matters as insurance. The trustees must follow any relevant clauses in the charity's governing document relating to bank accounts, and if no such clauses exist, bring in appropriate procedures, policies and mandates to ensure proper control of the charity money. If the charity has investments, consideration will need to be given to the appointment of an investment manager or outside professionals to manage the portfolio. Trustee Act 2000 gives trustees a general power of investment. This allows trustees to place funds in any kind of investment as though they were the absolute owner of those funds. Trustees must comply with certain conditions when using this power. The general power of investment is in addition to any existing power, subject to any restrictions and exclusions in the charity's governing document. Trustees would meet on a regular basis, depending upon the size of the charity. This may be quarterly, it may be monthly, but of course a trustee can also delegate responsibilities. With the large charity, there may well be a chief executive or other officers, secretary, treasurer, etc., who take on specific responsibilities in the running of the charity. They would then report to the main body of trustees. As I mentioned earlier, outside professional help can be brought in, dependent upon the particular needs of the charity. A trustee should always be very careful, ensuring that the charity is acting within the objects of the trust. If a trust is set up specifically as an animal sanctuary for the relief and welfare of animals, then that is its work, and it should not distribute funds to other causes. Such an action would be a breach of trust, where the trustees can be personally liable. Very often with the larger charities, there will be subcommittees, perhaps a finance committee, perhaps a general purposes committee, perhaps a committee dealing with marketing, promotion, fundraising, etc. If work is delegated down the line, then trustees should ensure that appropriate minutes are kept of subcommittee meetings and passed back up the line for consideration by the main trustee board. Trustees will expect to see reports from the treasurer or finance manager on a regular basis. Certainly larger charities would be expected to produce regular monthly or quarterly reporting and maintain budgets. Trustees would be expected, even in smaller charities, to be mindful of preparing budgets and adhering to them. In the smaller charity, the trustees would certainly be the signatories to the bank account. With a large charity, this may well be delegated, although the signature of trustees may be necessary for payments of larger sums of money, such levels being set in relation to the level of income and expenditure of the trust. It is quite common practice for charities to try and ensure that their trustee board has a diverse range of skills. In an ideal world, it would be good to have a trustee with a financial background, one with a property background, one with HR experience, fundraising, marketing, etc. A diverse board certainly gives security to the other trustees that all eventualities can be covered. In the absence of specific skills, then such work should be delegated to outside professionals. In areas of fundraising, trustees should always ensure that they have a proper control of funds, and that funds raised are spent on the purposes for which they were raised. Trustees should always ensure that the accounting records of the trust do identify between restricted monies and unrestricted monies, that is, restricted monies given for specific purposes as distinct from money raised for the general purposes of the charity. Good software can provide this information. Trustees should always be aware of documentation and grant-making bodies as to the requirements necessary to meet the directions given for the use of the money. Trustees are ultimately responsible for the presentation and filing of the charity's accounts and the signing of them. Independent examiners and auditors will be used to provide the external scrutiny, but the ultimate responsibility lies with the trustee that the accounts show a true and fair position, particularly in the case of accrual accounts. The presentation of annual accounts, and more particularly the trustee's annual report, is an integral part of the work of a trustee, and the Charities Act sets out various disclosure requirements necessary in a trustee's annual report regarding the work of the trust, that is, its achievements during the year, its performances against budget, its future expectations, etc. The role of a trustee is not to be taken lightly. We live in a world of litigation, and a trustee does have the ultimate legal and fiscal responsibility for the charity. Thank you for listening to this podcast.